Ponder Stibbons cleared his throat.
"Where would you like me to start?" he said. "I could probably finish off the elephant."
"How are you at slime?" Ponder hadn't considered a future as a slime designer, but everyone had to start somewhere.
"Fine," he said. "Fine."
"Of course, slime just splits down the middle," said the god, as they walked along rows of glowing, life-filled cubes while beetles sizzled overhead. "Not a lot of future in that, really. It works all right for lower life forms, but frankly it's a bit embarrassing for the more complicated creatures, and positively lethal for horses. No, sex is going to be very, very useful, Ponder. It'll keep everything on its toes, and that will give us time to work on the big project." Ponder sighed. Ah, he knew there had to be a big project. The big project. A god wasn't going to do all this sort of thing just to make life better for inflammable cows.
"Could I help with that?" he said. "I'm sure I could make a contribution."
"Really? I thought perhaps animals and birds would be more up your... The god waved his hands vaguely. "Up whatever you walk on, where you live."
"Well, yes, but they're a bit limited, aren't they?"
said Ponder. The god beamed. "There's nothing like being near a happy god. It's like giving your brain a hot bath."
"Exactly," he said. "Limited, the very word. Each one stuck in some desert or jungle or mountain, relying on one or two foods, at the mercy of every vagary of the universe and wiped out by the merest change of climate. What a terrible waste." "That's right," said Ponder. "What you need is a creature that is resourceful and adaptable. Am I right?"
"Oh, very well put, Ponder. I can see you've turned up at just the right time." A pair of huge doors swung open in front of them, revealing a circular room with a shallow pyramid of steps in the centre. At the summit was another cloud of blue mist, in which occasional lights flared and died. The future unrolled in front of Ponder Stibbons. His eyes were so bright that his glasses steamed, that he could probably scorch holes in thin paper. Oh, right. What more could any natural philosopher dream of? He'd got the theories, now he could do the practice. And this time, it'd be done properly. To hell with messing up the future. That's what the future was for. Oh, he'd been against it, that was true, but it had been, well, when someone else was thinking of doing it. But now he'd got the ear of a god, and maybe some intelligence could be applied to the task of creating intelligence. For a start, it ought to be possible to put together the human brain so that long beards weren't associated with wisdom, which would instead be seen to reside in those who were young and skinny and required glasses for close work.
"And you've finished this?" he said as they climbed the steps.
"Broadly, yes," said the god. "My greatest achievement. Frankly, it makes the elephants look very flimsy by comparison, but there's plenty of fine detail left to do if you think you're up to it."
"It'd be an honour," said Ponder.
The blue mist was right in front of him. By the look of the sparks, something very important was happening in there.
"Do you give them any instructions before you let them out?" he said, his breathing shallow.
"A few simple ones," said the god. He waved a wrinkled hand and the glowing ball began to contract. "Mostly they work things out themselves."
of course," said Ponder. "And I suppose if they go wrong, we could always put them right with a few commandments."
"Not really necessary," said the god as the blue ball vanished and revealed the pinnacle of creation. "I find very simple instructions are quite sufficient. You know, head for dark places, that sort of thing."
"There.
Isn't it perfect? What a piece of work! The sun will burn out, the seas will dry up, but this chap will be there. You mark my..." "Hello? Ponder?" The dean wet a finger and held it up. "We have the wind on our starboard beam," he said.
"That's good, is it?" said the senior wrangler.
"Could be, could be. Let's hope he can take us to this continent he mentioned. I'm getting nervous of islands."
Ridcully finished hacking through the stem of the boat and threw it overboard. At the top of the green mast, the trumpet-like blooms appeared to tremble in the wind. The leaf sail creaked slowly into a different position.
"I'd say this was a miracle of nature," said the dean, "if we hadn't just met the person who did it." Rather spoils it, that."
While wizards were not generally adventurous, they did understand that a vital part of any great undertaking is the securing of adequate provisions, which is why the boat was noticeably heavier in the water.
The Dean selected a natural cigar, lit it and made a face.
"Not the best," he said. "Rather green."
"We'll just have to rough it," said Ridcully. "What are you doing, Senior Wrangler?"
"Just preparing a little tray for Mrs. Whitlow. A few choice things."
The wizards glanced towards the crude awning they'd erected towards the prow. It wasn't that she'd actually asked for it. It was simply that she'd made some remark about how hot the sun was, as anyone might, and suddenly the wizards were getting in each other's way as they vied with one another to cut poles and weave palm leaves. Perhaps never has so much intellectual effort gone into building a sunshade, which might have accounted for the wobble.
"I thought it was my turn to do that," said the Dean coldly.
"No, Dean, you took her the fruit drink, if you remember," said the Senior Wrangler, cutting a cheese nut into dainty segments.
"That was just one small drink," the Dean snapped. "You're doing a whole tray. Look, you've even done a flower arrangement in a coconut shell."
"Mrs. Whitlow likes that sort of thing," said the Senior Wrangler calmly. "But she did say it was still a bit warm, so possibly you can fan her with a palm leaf while I peel these grapes for her."
"Once again it is left to me to point out the elementary unfairness," said the Dean. "Merely waving a leaf is a very menial activity compared to removing grape skins, and I happen to outrank you, Senior Wrangler."
"Indeed, Dean, and exactly how do you work that out?"
"It is not my opinion, man. It is written into the faculty structure."
"Of where, precisely?"
"Have you gone totally bursar? Unseen University, of course."
"And where is that exactly?"
said the Senior Wrangler, carefully arranging some lilies in a pleasing design.
"Ye gods, man, it's...
The Dean flapped a hand in the direction of the horizon, and his voice trailed off as certain facts of time and space bore in on him.
"I'll leave you to work it out, shall I?"
said the Senior Wrangler, getting off his knees and raising the tray reverentially.
"I'll help!"
shouted the Dean, lumbering to his feet.
"It's very light, I assure you."
"No, no, I can't let you do it all by yourself."
Each holding the tray with one hand, and trying to push the other man away with the spare hand, they lurched forward, leaving a trail of spilt coconut milk and petals. Ridcully rolled his eyes. It must be the heat, he thought. He turned to the Chair of Indefinite Studies, who was trying to tie a short log to a long stick with a piece of creeper.
I was just thinking," he said, "that everyone's gone a little bit mad, except me and you. What are you doing there?"
"I was just wondering whether Mrs. Whitlow might like a game of croquet," said the Chair.
He waggled his eyebrows conspiratorially. The Arch-Chancellor sighed and wandered off along the deck. The librarian had gone back to being a deck chair as a suitable mode for shipboard life, and the bursar had gone to sleep on him. The big leaf moved slightly. Ridcully got the feeling that the green trumpets on the mast were sniffing. The wizards were already a little way from the shore, but he saw the column of dust come down the track. It stopped at the beach and became a dot which plunged into the sea. The sail creaked again and flapped as the wind grew.
"Ahoy there!" shouted Ridcully.
The distant figure waved for a moment and then continued swimming. Ridcully filled his pipe and watched with interest as Ponder Stibbons caught up with the boat.
"Very well swum, if I may say so," he said.
"Permission to come aboard, sir,"
said Ponder, treading water.
"Could you throw down a creeper?"
"Why, certainly."
The Arch-Chancellor puffed his pipe as the wizard climbed aboard.
"Possibly a record time over that distance, Mr. Stibbons."
"Thank you, sir,"
said Ponder, dripping water on the deck.
"And may I congratulate you on being properly dressed? You are wearing your pointy hat, which is the sine qua non of a wizard in public."
"Thank you, sir."
"It is a good hat."
"Thank you, sir.
They say a wizard without his hat is undressed, Mr. Stibbons."
"So I've heard, sir."
"But in your case, I must point out that you are with your hat, but you are still, in a very real sense, undressed."
"I thought the robe would slow me down, sir."
"And while it is good to see you, Stibbons, albeit rather more of you than I would usually care to contemplate, I am moved to ask why you are, in fact, here."
"I suddenly felt it would be unfair to deprive the university of my services, sir."
"Really? A sudden rush of nostalgia for the old alma mater, eh?"
"You could say that, sir."
Ridcully's eyes twinkled behind the smoke, and not for the first time Ponder suspected that the man was sometimes rather cleverer than he appeared. It would not be hard.
The Arch-Chancellor shrugged, removed his pipe and poked around inside it to remove a particularly obstructive clinker. "The senior wrangler's bathing costume is around somewhere," he said. "I should put it on if I were you. I suspect that offending Mrs. Whitlow at the moment will get you hanged. All right. But if there is anything you want to talk about, my door is always open."
"Thank you, sir."
"Right now, of course, I don't have a door."
"Thank you, sir."
"Imagine it as being open, nevertheless."
"Thank you, sir."
After all, Ponder thought, as he slipped gratefully away, the wizards of UU were merely crazy. Not even the bursar was insane. Even now, if he closed his eyes, he could still see the god of evolution beaming so happily as the cockroach stirred. Rincewind rattled the bars. "Don't I get a trial?" he shouted. After a while, a warder wandered along the corridor.
"What do you want a trial for, mister?"
"What? Well, call me Mr. Silly, but it might just prove that I wasn't trying to steal the damn sheep, mightn't it?" said Rincewind. "I was, in fact, rescuing it. If only you people would track down the thief, he'd tell you." The warder leaned against the wall and stuck his hands in his belt.
"Yeah, well, it's a funny thing," he said. "But, you know, we searched and searched and put up notices and everything. But funny thing, you'll never believe this. The bastard hasn't had the decency to come forward. Makes you despair of human nature, eh?"
"So what's going to happen to me?" The warder scratched his nose.
"Gonna hang you by the neck until you're dead, mate. Tomorrow morno."
"You couldn't perhaps just hang me by the neck until I'm sorry?"
"No, mate. Gotta be dead."
"Good grief, it was only a sheep when all's said and done." The warder grinned widely.
"Eh, a lot of men have gone to the gallows saying that in the past," he said. "As a matter of fact, you're the first sheep stealer we've had here for years. All our big heroes have been sheep stealers. You're going to get a big crowd." "Bah!" "Maybe a flock, too," said the warder.
"That's another thing," said Rincewind. "Why is this sheep in my cell?"
"Evidence, mate."
Rincewind looked down at the sheep. "Oh, well, no worries, then." The warder wandered off. Rincewind sat down on the bunk. Well, he could look on the bright side, couldn't he? This was civilization. He hadn't seen much of it, what with being tied across the back of a horse and everything, but what he'd been able to see was full of ruts and hoof prints and smelled pretty bad, which civilization often does. They were going to hang him in the morning. This building was the first one made of stone he'd seen in this country. They had watchmen, even. They were going to hang him in the morning. There were the sounds of carts and people filtering in through the high window. They were going to hang him in the morning. He gazed around the cell. It looked as though whoever had built it had unaccountably forgotten to include any useful trapdoors. Trapdoors. Now, there was a word he shouldn't think about. He'd been in nastier places than this, much, much nastier, and that made it worse because he'd been up against nasty, weird and magical things, which suddenly seemed a lot easier to contemplate than the fact that he was held in some stone box, and in the morning some perfectly nice people who he might quite like if he met them in a bar were going to march him out and make him stand on a really unsafe floor in a very tight collar.
"Meh!"
"Shut up!"
"Meh!"
"Couldn't you have had a bath or a dip or something? It's a bit agricultural in here." The wall, now his eyes had become accustomed to the gloom, was covered with scrawls, and in particular those little wicket-gate tallies drawn by prisoners who are counting the days. They were going to hang him in the morning. So that was one chore he wouldn't have to do. Oh, shut up, shut up. Now he came to look closer. Most of the counts went up to one. He lay back with his eyes closed. Of course he'd get rescued. He always got rescued. Although, come to think of it, always in circumstances that put him in such a lot more danger than a prison cell usually held. Well, he'd been in enough cells. There were ways to handle these things. The important thing was to be direct. He got up and banged on the bars until the warder sauntered along the corridor.
"Yes, mate?"
"I just want to get things sorted out," said Rincewind. "It's not as though I've got time to waste, okay?"
"Yep."
"Is there any chance that you're going to fall asleep in a chair opposite this cell with your keys fully exposed on a table in front of you?" They looked at the empty corridor. "I'd have to get someone to help me bring a table down here," said the warder doubtfully. "Can't see it happening, mister. Sorry."
"Right, okay." Rincewind thought for a moment. "All right. Is my dinner likely to be brought in by a young lady carrying, and this is important, carrying a tray covered with a cloth?"
"No, 'cause I do the cooking."
"Right."
"Bread and water is what I'm good at."
"Right, just checking."
"Here, that sticky brown stuff they brought in with you is top stuff on bread, mister."
"Be my guest.
I can feel the vitamins and minerals doing me a power of good."
"No worries. Now, yes. Laundry. Are there any big laundry baskets around which will happily get tipped down to a chute to the outside world?"
"Sorry, mister. There's an old washerwoman comes in to collect it."
"Really?" Rincewind brightened. "Ah, a washerwoman. Big lady, bulky dress, possibly wears a hood which can be pulled down to cover a lot of her face."
"Yep, pretty much."
"Well then, is she due in,
"She's my mum," said the warder.
"Right, fine." They looked at one another. "I reckon that about covers it then," said Rincewind. "I hope you didn't mind me asking."
"Bless you, no. No worries, happy to help. Worked out what you're going to say on the gallows, have you? Only some of the ballad writers want to know, if you wouldn't mind."
"Ballads?"
"Oh, yeah. There's 3 so far, and I reckon there'll be 10 by tomorrow."
Rincewind rolled his eyes. "How many of them have put 'Two Ralura Ladity' in the chorus?" he asked.
"All of them."
"Oh, gods."
"And you wouldn't mind changing your name, would you? Only they're saying Rincewind is a bit tricky to turn a line on.
Concerning of a bush ranger, Rincewind was his name. It's got the wrong sort of sound." "Well, I'm sorry. Perhaps you'd better let me go then."
"Ha! Nice one. Now, if you want my advice, you'll keep it short when you're up on the gallows," said the warder. "The best famous last words are the shortest. Something simple generally works best. Go easy on the swearing."
"Look, all I did was steal a sheep, and I didn't even do that. What's everyone so excited about?" said Rincewind desperately.
"Oh, very notorious crime, sheep stealing," said the warder cheerfully. "Strike a chord. Little man battling against the forces of brutal authority. People like that. You'll be remembered in song and story. Especially if you come up with some good last words. Like I said."
The warder hitched up his belt.
"To tell you the truth, a lot of people these days haven't even seen a bloody sheep. But hearing that someone's stolen one makes them feel proper exians. It even does me good to have a proper criminal in the cells for once, instead of all these bloody politicians."
Rincewind sat down on the bunk again with his head in his hands.
"'Cause a famous escape is nearly as good as getting hanged," said the warder, in the manner of someone trying to keep up someone else's spirits.
"Really?" said Rincewind.
"You ain't asked if the little grill in the floor there leads to the sewers,"
the warder prompted. Rincewind peered between his fingers.
"Does it?" "We ain't got any sewers."
"Thank you. You've been very helpful." The warder strolled off again, whistling. Rincewind lay back on the bunk and closed his eyes again.
"Bah! Shut up."
"Excuse me, mister."
Rincewind groaned and sat up again. This time the voice was coming from the high, small, barred window.
"Yes, what is it?"
"You know, when you was caught..."
"Well, what about it?"
"What kind of a tree were you under?"
Rincewind looked up at the narrow square of blue the prisoner calls the sky.
"What kind of a question is that to ask me?" "It's for the ballad, see? Only it'd help if it was a name with 3 syllables."
"How do I know? I didn't stop for a bit of botany."
All right, fair enough," said the hidden speaker. "Would you mind telling me what you was doing just before you stole the sheep?"
"I didn't steal the sheep."
"Right, right, okay. What was you doing just before you didn't steal the sheep?"
"I don't know. I can't remember."
Were you boiling your billy by any chance?"
"I'm not admitting to that. The way you people talk, that could mean anything."
"Means cooking something up in a tin."
"Oh, well, yes, I had been doing that, as it happens."
"Good on ye."
Rincewind thought he heard the sound of scribbling.
"Shame you didn't die at the end. But you're going to get hung, so that's all right. Got a beaut tune for this one. You just can't stop whistling it. Well, of course, you will. No worries.
Thank you for that.
Reckon you might be as famous as Tinhead Ned, mate.
Really?
Rincewind went and lay down on his bunk again.
Yeah. They used to lock him up in that very cell you're in now, in fact, and he always escaped. No one knows how, because that's a bloody good lock and he didn't bend any bars. He said they'd never build a jail that could hold him.
Thin fellow, was he?
Nope.
So he had a key or something?
Nope.
Gotta go now, mate.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Do you think your ghost will be heard if people pass by the billabong or not?
What?
It'd be helpful if it did. Makes a good last verse. Top stuff.
I don't know.
Well, I'll say it, Will, shall I? No one's gonna go back and check.
Don't let me stand in your way, then.
Bonza, I'll get these song sheets printed up in time for the hanging. Don't you worry about that.
I won't.
Rincewind lay back. Tinhead Ned again. That was just a joke, he could spot it. It was some kind of torture telling him that anyone had ever escaped from a cell like this. They wanted him to run around rattling bars and things, but even he could see they were well set in and very heavy, and the lock was bigger than his head. He was just lying back on the bunk again when the warder turned up. There were a couple of men with him. Rincewind was pretty sure there weren't any trolls here, because it was probably too hot for them, and anyway there wouldn't be enough room for them on the driftwood, what with all those camels. But these men definitely had the heavy-set look of men who occupy the kind of job where the entrance examination is, "What is your name?" and they scrape through on the third try. The warder was wearing a big grin and carrying a tray.
"Got some dinner for you," he said.
"I won't tell you anything no matter how much you feed me," Rincewind warned.
"You'll like this," the warder urged,
pushing the tray forward. There was a covered bowl on it.
"I've done it special for you. It's a regional speciality, mate."
"I thought you said bread and water's what you're good at."
"Well, yeah, but I had a bash at this anyway."
Rincewind watched gloomily as the warder lifted the cover. Any seasoned traveller soon learns to avoid anything wished on them as a regional speciality, because all the term means is that the dish is so unpleasant the people living everywhere else will bite off their own legs rather than eat it. But hosts still press it upon distant guests anyway. "Go on, have the dog's head stuffed with macerated cabbage and pork noses. It's a regional speciality." It looked fairly inoffensive, but they often did. It looked, in fact, like pea soup, he said.
"Yep."
"The leguminous vegetable comes in pods?"
"Yep."
"I thought I'd better check that point."
"No worries."
Rincewind looked down at the knobbly green surface. Was it just possible that someone had invented a regional speciality you could eat? And then something rose out of the depths. For a moment, Rincewind thought it was a very small shark. It bobbed to the surface and then settled back down again while the soup slopped over it.
"What was that?" "Meat pie floater," said the warder. "Meat pie floating in a pea soup. Best bloody supper on earth, mate."
"Ah, supper,"
said Rincewind, as realization dawned. "This is another one of those late-night after-the-pub foods, right? And what kind of meat is in it? No, forget I asked, it's a stupid question. I know this sort of food. If you have to ask what kind of meat is in it, you're too sober. Ever tried spaghetti and custard?"
"Can you sprinkle coconut on top of it?"
"Probably."
"Thanks, mate. I'll surely give it a go," said the warder. "Got some other good news for you, too."
"You're letting me out?"
"Ah, you wouldn't want that, a hard-bitten larrikin like yourself. Now, Greg and Vince here will be coming back later to put you in irons."
He stepped aside. The wall-shaped men were holding a length of chain, several shackles, and a small but very, very heavy-looking ball. Rincewind sighed. One door closes, he thought, and another door slams shut.
"This is, good, is it?" he said.
"Ah, you'll get an extra verse for that, for sure," said the warder. "No one's been hung in irons since Tinhead Ned."
"I thought there wasn't a prison cell that could hold him," said Rincewind.
"Oh, he could get out of them," said the warder. "He just couldn't run very far."
Rincewind eyed the metal ball.
"Oh, gods."
"Vince says,
"How much do you weigh? 'Cause he has to add the chains to your weight to get the drop right," said the warder.
"Does that matter?" said Rincewind in a hollow voice. "I mean, I die anyway, don't I?"
"Yeah, no worries there, but if he gets it wrong, see, you either end up with a neck 6 feet long, or, you laugh about this, your head flies off like a perishing cork."
"Oh, good.
With Larrick and Larry, we had to search the roof all arvo."
"Marvellous. All arvo, eh?" said Rincewind. "Well, you won't have that problem with me. I shall be elsewhere when I'm being hanged."
"That's what we like to hear," said the warder, punching him jovially in the elbow. "A battler to the end, eh?"
There was a rumbling from Mount Vince.
"And Vince says he'll be very privileged if you'd care to spit in his eye when he puts the rope around your neck," the warder went on. "That'll be something to show his grandchildren."
"Will you all please go away?" Rincewind shouted.
"Ah, you'll be wanting some time to plot your getaway," said the warder knowingly. "No worries. We'll be leaving you alone then."
"Thank you.
Till about 5 a.m.?
"Good," said Rincewind gloomily. "Got any requests for your last breakfast? Something that takes a really, really long time to prepare?" said Rincewind.
"That's the spirit.
Go away."
"No worries."
The men walked off, but the warder strolled back after a while as if he had something on his mind.
"There is something that you ought to know about the hanging, though," he said. "Might brighten up your night."
"Yes."
"We've got a special humanitarian tradition if the trapdoor sticks 3 times.
"Yes."
"Sounds a bit odd, but it's happened once or twice, believe it or not."
A tiny green shoot rose from the blackened branches of hope.
"And what's the tradition?" said Rincewind.
"It's on account of it being heartless to have a man standing there more than 3 times, knowing that any second he's..."
"Yes, yes, and then all his..."
"Yes, and the worst part to my mind is where you..."
"Yes, I understand, and so, after the 3rd time,
he's allowed back into his cell while we get a carpenter in to repair the trap door," said the warder. "We even give him his dinner, if it's gone on a long time."
"And?"
"Well, when the carpenter's given it a good test, then we take him out again and hang him."
He saw Rincewind's expression.
"No need to look like that. It's better than having to stand around in the cold all morning, isn't it? That wouldn't be nice."
When he'd gone, Rincewind sat and stared at the wall.
"Shut up."
So, it was down to this then. One brief night left, and then, if those clowns had anything to do with it, happy people would be wandering the streets to see where his head had come down. There was no justice.
"Good day, mate." "Oh, no, please. I just thought I should enter into the spirit of the thing. A very convivial people, aren't they?" said Death.
He was sitting beside Rincewind.
"You just can't wait, can you?" said Rincewind bitterly. "No worries."
"So this is really it, then. I was supposed to have saved this country, you know, and I'm going to really die."
"Oh, yes. This is certain, I'm afraid."
"It's the stupidity of it that gets me. I mean, think of all the times I've nearly died in the past. I could have been flamed by dragons, right? Or eaten by huge things with tentacles. Or even had every single particle of my body fly off in a different direction."
"You have certainly had an interesting life."
"Is it true that your life passes before your eyes before you die?"
"Yes."
"Ghastly thought, really?" Rincewind shuddered.
"Oh, gods, I've just had another one. Suppose I am just about to die, and this is my whole life passing in front of my eyes." "I think perhaps you do not understand. People's whole lives do pass in front of their eyes before they die. The process is called living. Would you like a prawn?"
Rincewind looked down at the bucket on Death's lap.
"No, thank you. I really don't think so. They can be pretty deadly, and I must say it's a bit much of you to come here and gloat and eat prawns at me."
"I beg your pardon?"
"Just because I'm being hanged in the morning, I mean."
"Are you? Then I shall look forward to hearing how you escaped. I'm due to meet a man in... Death's eye sockets glowed as he interrogated his memory. Ah, yes. Inside a crocodile. Several hundred miles away, I believe. What? Then why are you here? Oh, I thought you might like to see a friendly face. And now I think I had better be going. Death stood up. Very pleasant city in many respects. Try to see the opera house while you're here. Hang on. I mean, hold on. You told me I was certainly going to die. Everyone is, eventually. The wall opened and closed around Death as if it wasn't there, which was, from his lengthy perspective, quite true. But how? I can't walk through, Rincewind began. He sat down again. The sheep cowered in the corner. Rincewind looked at the untouched meat pie floater and gave the pie a prod. It sank slowly beneath the vivid green soup. The sounds of the city filtered in. After a while, the pie rose again like a forgotten continent, sending a very small wave slopping against the edge of the bowl. Rincewind lay back on the thin blanket and stared at the ceiling. Someone had even been writing on that, too. In fact, good day might look at the hinges, Ned. Slowly, as if being raised by invisible strings, Rincewind turned and looked at the door. The hinges were massive. They weren't screwed into the doorframe so that some clever prisoner might unscrew them. They were huge iron hooks, hammered into the stone itself, so that two heavy rings welded onto the door could drop right down onto them. What was the man talking about? He walked over and examined the lock closely. It drove a huge metal rod into the frame on its side and looked quite unpickable. Rincewind stared at the door for some time. Then he rubbed his hands together and, gritting his teeth, tried to lift the door on the hinge side. Yes, there was just enough play. It was possible to lift the rings off the spikes. Then, if you pulled slightly and took a knee-wobbling step this way, you could yank the lock's rod out of its hole and the entire door into the cell. And then the man could walk through and carefully re-hang the door again and quietly wander away. And that, Rincewind thought as he carefully manoeuvred the door back onto the hinges, was exactly what a stupid person would do. At moments like this, cowardice was an exact science. There were times that called for mindless, terror-filled panic, and times that called for measured, considered, thoughtful panic. Right now, he was in a place of safety. It was admittedly the death cell, but the point was that it was perhaps the one place in this country where nothing bad was going to happen for a little while. The Exians didn't look like the kind of people who went in for torture, although it was always possible they might make him eat some more of their food. So for the moment, he had time. Time to plan ahead, to consider his next move, to apply his intellect to the problem at hand. He stared at the wall for a moment and then stood up and gripped the bars. Right, that seemed to be about long enough. Now to run like hell.